Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Did you watch the Oscars last night? I think the only person in America who thinks that that was the perfect Oscar show is Steve Harvey. He's like, my long nightmare is over. Someone else did it. It was a wild last few minutes of the Oscars. I guess not as many people watch the Oscars as used to, so maybe you missed it. But whether you watch the Oscars or not, film remains a very powerful and important part of our culture, maybe more important than ever. In this hour, that is exactly what we are talking about. I am your host, Cy Kellett. Our number, 888-318-7884. If you want to talk about the role of film in our lives, maybe especially in our spiritual lives, or if you have any questions at all about faith and film, our guest this hour, Deacon Stephen Graydonis. He is the film critic for the National Catholic Register and writes regularly for Catholic Digest and Crux. And with David Deserto, he co-hosts the Gabriel Award-winning cable TV show Real Faith. That's R-E-E-L. I suppose you probably could guess that already, for New Evangelization Television. And you can find his homilies also at the National Catholic Register website. He blogs them there. Deacon Stephen Graydonis, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Cy.
So it's almost a professional requirement. You have to watch the Oscars, right?
Well, actually, I haven't watched them per se in a number of years, giving a little bit of trade secrets here, but I don't own a television. So, I mean, we have televisions, but we don't have a way to watch broadcast television. So what I usually do is I wind up following them on Twitter and sort of picking up the video where I can. And sometimes I participate in a group discussion on Facebook or social media, particularly with other Christian cinephiles, and we talk about the awards as they come in.
So even before the awards, I'm curious, how did you feel about the nominees for the Best Picture?
It was, as it often is, a mixed bag. There were some films on the list of the nine nominees now. There's a potential 10 Best Picture nominees that the Oscars have allowed themselves for the past several years. And of the nine slots that they actually filled, there were a number of films that I thought very highly of, including Arrival and Hacksaw Ridge. I was not a huge fan of the front runner La La Land. I actually admired more the film that actually wound up winning, Moonlight, as difficult as the subject matter is.
Wait, no, I thought La La Land won.
A lot of people thought La La Land won.
I just saw that and I turned the TV off. Isn't that what happened? La La Land won?
This was an unprecedented disaster in Oscar history. It's not the first time that the wrong envelope was given to the announcer and that the wrong name was read. It happened back in 1964, but on that occasion, the wrong name that was read was not one of the nominees that was up for the award, so it was pretty quickly cleared up. This time, it went much too far. You had, you know, the people on stage, the acceptance speech before somebody stepped out and corrected the record. It was a wrong envelope, and Moonlight actually wound up winning, which was a big upset, I have to say. After the 2016 presidential election and this, I've given up making prognostications about the future. I want to be zapped with electroshock therapy if I even use the future tense going forward.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll hook you up to the electroshock. But there's going to have to be a lot of people hooked up to that. The last year has been not a good one for prognosticators. But there's a difference between saying what you think will be the winner and what you think should be the winner.
Yes, absolutely.
And so you thought La La Land would probably win.
Yes. Yeah, basically the rule of thumb has been whenever a movie is up for Best Picture that's about the entertainment industry, movie making, yeah, or even that is set in Los Angeles, it's almost a sure thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year there were other forces in play. And I think a lot of people wanted La La Land to win, but there was a certain pushback too. People felt that it was overrated, and there was a lot of feeling behind Moonlight. Again, neither of those were among my favorite films of the year. Of the ones that were nominated, I would have picked Arrival if I'd had the choice.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's because
Arrival was my number 9 film of 2016. I found it to be fascinating, smart science fiction of a kind that we almost don't see anymore. It's a film that takes ideas seriously. In this case, it explores the philosophy of language and the question of whether the particular language that we speak, the vocabulary, the syntax, the structure of the language actually shapes the way that we think, and therefore whether learning a new language can cause you to perceive the world in a different way. And in the movie, of course, it goes in a very science fiction direction with that conceit, and ultimately one that I found to be to be very pro-life. There's a striking pro-life resonance to the film that I found very moving.
I hadn't thought about that, but it did one of my favorite things that science fiction movies can do is it also has it plays with time in a way that is really surprising and interesting. But I hadn't thought about that pro-life side. That's exactly right. The life of someone in the movie is worth a great deal.
And worth a great deal, even when it's known that this is a life that will be cut short. It's a life that will involve suffering. This is the antithesis of the mentality that says, I don't want to bring a life into the world if it's going to be deformed or affected in any way. Everything has to be perfect in order for life to have value. Now, that theme that you mentioned of time bending also I think is very powerful, and I think it speaks to a lot of things that we could get into in terms of the Christian understanding of time and eternity and of our desire to transcend time.
Well, maybe I should use that as my entree to kind of ask you, as a Christian, as a Catholic person, as a deacon of the Catholic Church, who's also a movie reviewer, what are the values that you're looking for in a movie? I mean, and I don't mean values just in a moral sense, but in the aesthetic values as well of what a movie should look like and sound like and all of that. Why would your take maybe be different from, I don't know, the guy who does the movie reviews for The New Yorker?
On one level, they might not be all that different because, as Pope Pius XII points out in his 1955 addresses on the ideal film that you can look up at the Vatican website, what everyone is looking for from the movies, according to the Pope, is what he calls a ray of God in the form of some revelation of goodness, truth, and beauty. And goodness, truth, and beauty are universal. The fundamental difference, I think, between me and a non-Christian critic, other than the fact that I'm going to have some moral sensibilities that are differently shaped because I'm a Catholic, I would say there are things that God has placed in our hearts that we all want to believe, and I really believe them. I've talked to film critics whose response to a particular – these are atheists I'm talking about – atheist film critics whose response to a particular film took the form of, this movie made me want to believe in God. Or maybe I love this movie so much because deep down subconsciously I want to believe in God. And I really believe in God. So that's the difference. I can put that right out there in my reviews.
888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Graydonis. And if you want to talk movies with us, we're happy to have you this hour. 888-318-7884. You don't have to agree. You can disagree or you can have a different take. 888-318-7884. Before we go to the break, I'm not going to do all of your top five movies for 2016 until after the break. But I want to say number five truly surprised me. And not because I saw it. I didn't see it. But I had no idea that would be that good a film that you would put it in your top five. You know that I'm talking about O.J. Made in America,
which won the Oscar last night for Best Documentary. That was one of the choices at the Academy Awards last night that I was really pleased to see. O.J. Made in America is much more than just a recap of the rise and fall of O.J. Simpson. It's a much more kind of panoramic look at America and American culture, at race relations, at relations between the black community and law enforcement. It uses the O.J. Simpson case to really explore the soul of a nation. I found it to be revelatory and breathtaking. It's almost 8 hours long. It was filmed for ESPN, and it's in five segments. I certainly didn't watch it all in one sitting, but it's 7.5 hours very well spent.
888-318-7884 is our number. This is Catholic Answers Live. We're talking movies. Wait, maybe you saw the a catastrophe. Is that maybe too strong a word? I don't know if an award show error can be called a catastrophe, but certainly the excitement in last night's awards. If you have a take on the movies, maybe in a particular way connected to our Catholic faith, we'd love to take your call. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live with more from Deacon Stephen Gradonis.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, everyone. This is Carlo Broussard. I've got a challenge for you. It's called the 20 Answers Challenge. Catholic Answers 20 Answers series offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 20 books in the series, we're going to knock the price in half. And we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. Then, we're going to take $10 from each set purchase and provide materials to our friends at St. Paul Street Evangelization so they can do what they do best, hit the streets and share the Catholic faith. That's $10 from every set you purchase, going to help our fellow workers in the vineyard. You win, St. Paul Street Evangelization wins, the Catholic Church wins. That's a win-win-win. Together, we can be a part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
What are miracles, and why does God work them? How can I believe in miracles if I've never experienced one? Aren't miracles just something pre-scientific people made up to explain what they couldn't understand? 20 Answers Miracles unpacks the nature of miracles, their appearances in Scripture and history, how the Church evaluates them, and ways to answer doubters who say they're mere superstition. 20 Answers Miracles is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest this hour, Dr. Ray. Oh, wait, that's wrong envelope. Sorry. No. Deacon Stephen Gradonis is our guest this hour. And we're going to go through your top five. If people want to know your top 10 and even your honorable mentions and your runners up for the year 2016, I found them fascinating. You can get all that at decentfilms.com. That's your website, decentfilms.com.
Yes, it is. Everything that I write mostly for the National Catholic Register these days. I'm also writing for Crux and Catholic Digest, and everything that I write appears at those websites for the first 30 days. But after that, everything is archived at decentfilms.com. So if you ever want to find anything I've written, that's the place to look for it.
Well, out of your top five movies for 2016, I only knew two of them and hadn't seen them. So I don't know what's wrong with me. But so O.J. Made in America, we mentioned, was your number five. Your number four, The Red Turtle. Any comment on The Red Turtle?
The Red Turtle is a film that, for me, has a very special kind of spell. And it's a spell that I usually only encounter in animated short films. This is something that Pixar started up a number of years ago. They brought back the animated short, and Disney began doing it, and other studios. And the best animated shorts tell their stories without dialogue. It's pure visual storytelling. And in The Red Turtle, Studio Ghibli, the Japanese animation house co-founded by Hayao Miyazaki, gets together with a famous Dutch animator named Michael Dudok de Wit and tells a story of a castaway on an island and really explores the whole scope of life and survival and love and the link between generations over the course of, I think it's about 88 minutes, and all without dialogue. You're either going to find it boring and thin, or you're going to think that it's simply magical. And I was in that latter group.
But that's not a short film, 88 minutes.
No, it's not.
Oh, I thought you had.
But it's a style of storytelling that very few people would dare to tackle at that length.
I got you.
The question is, can you make this style of storytelling compelling for 88 minutes? Some people are going to watch it and say, it's kind of boring, it's kind of slow. I loved it. So your mileage may vary.
All right. Well, let's take a couple calls, and then we'll get to your top three films. We go to Manuel in Greenville, Texas, listening on 9:10 a.m. Manuel, you are on with Deacon Stephen Gradanis.
Hi there. Stephen, I saw your number one film, Patterson. I loved it very much.
Oh, thanks.
I'm stoked to hear.
Thanks, man. Thanks for giving that away. Forget it. Just
sorry.
Wrap the show now.
I'm worse.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry.
That's worse than what happened on the Oscars last night. That's worse.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm only teasing you.
Sorry. Go ahead. I'm just, the excitement just got to me.
I shouldn't have teased you about it. Go ahead. What's your question or your comment for
My question is pertaining to what are some films you're kind of excited for this year, and particularly one called The Shack. It's a Christian story with big Hollywood stars, and I saw the trailer myself. And I was kind of like, it kind of reminded me a bit too much of Collateral Beauty, but I've heard, I think I could be wrong about this, but I remember Bishop Robert Barron talked about the book. And I don't know, like, what are your initial thoughts on the trailer of it so far? Is it a film that might be worth watching, or is it going to be like a la God's Not Dead or Collateral Beauty kind of way?
I have actually seen a rough cut of The Shack, and I've signed an NDA. I'm not allowed to talk about that screening at this time. I can tell you that I've dipped my toes into the book, and, you know, some people love the book. Other people take a very hard line on the basis of some standard of doctrinal orthodoxy that The Shack is evil and must be rejected. I have to say I come down somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's heretical. I think it has some helpful things to say about theodicy, the problem of evil and why God allows bad things to happen. I think ultimately it has some limitations in that regard. I didn't find it to be deeply satisfying, and I do have some problems with it, but it's not as bad as some people say it is. I'm going to see the film again later this week, a finished cut, and I'm looking forward to reviewing it. You know, there's a lot of movies coming out that I'm not looking forward to this year. One that I kind of am is War for the Planet of the Apes, because the last film in this series, which I think was There's Dawn and Rise, and I forget which one comes first. I think it was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes that was the second one. I found that to be a really compelling allegory of a society and a societal situation in which there are people who are trying to build bridges between communities and then other people trying to burn those bridges, and how easy it is for the bridge burners to overturn the best intentions of the bridge builders. And if they bring that kind of thoughtfulness to War for the Planet of the Apes, then I'm going to be very happy.
Thanks, Manuel. Thanks very much for that call. I'm really glad to hear you mention Planet of the Apes, because I don't know why I'm sometimes ashamed to talk about my great love for the entire Planet of the Apes series.
Not at all.
No, 888-318-7884 is the number if you want to talk movies here. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Gradanis, who you probably know as the movie reviewer at the National Catholic Register and other places. We'll go to Tim in Houston, Texas, listening on 1430 Guadalupe Radio. Tim, you're on with Deacon Stephen Gradanis.
Hello. This is a question on the job of movie critics, especially, I guess, Catholic movie critics like yourself, Deacon. Mm-hmm. And the USCCB comes out and says that these movies are, certain movies are morally offensive. Do you look at all the movies? And if you do, aren't you, or any other Catholic movie critic or yourself, wouldn't you be worried about the negative influence or the movie has, you know, the power the movie has over you?
That is a very important question, and it's one that, as you may imagine, I have dedicated a lot of thought to over the years. As you know, the Catholic Church, Catholic critics have been engaged in evaluating the morality of films almost since the dawn of cinema, going back to the silent era. It's not actually the USCCB that does it. There was an organization that got started in the 1930s called the Legion of Decency. Their work was adopted into the U.S. Bishop's Department of Communications, and it became part of an office called the Office for Film and Broadcasting. It wasn't actually by the bishops themselves. It was by critics who worked for the bishops. I was one of those critics myself for a while. I did some freelance work for the Office for Film and Broadcasting and rated some of those movie reviews that you find on the bishop's website. Today, that work has been folded into Catholic News Service precisely because I think they don't want the work to be perceived as having the bishop's kind of stamp of approval, as if you as if good Catholics have to agree with these ratings. But exposure to morally offensive material in films does take a toll on a person who watches them. I don't watch a lot of movies compared to many critics. It's a part-time job for me, not a full-time job, and I pick and choose the films that I watch. I do see some films that I find that are offensive. Even films that I find morally uplifting and powerful often have harsh content, and that it has a corrosive effect on your soul if you're exposed to a lot of it at once. There are many jobs in this world, priests who are confessors or exorcists, psychiatrists, police officers, garbage men, dentists, who deal with some of the less savory aspects of human existence. And it does take a soul, but it's work that's worth doing. It's work that's providing a service for people, and it's work that has its own rewards. And you have to know what to do when you come home from – when a priest comes home from hearing, you know, 2 hours of confessions and hearing about the sordid underbelly of what human beings do, you know, and then he goes and sits in front of the Blessed Sacrament for an hour, or he goes and prays the rosary and maybe kicks back and watches a good movie that he found in a review at decentfilms.com. So you have to have some kind of therapy for yourself. You have to have times of healing as well as times where you get out there and hopefully see something that you can either recommend for people or warn them about. And, you know, that's the job. And so these are the things that I think about.
You know, even more than many other media, though, movies have a real power in the imagination, and not just the imagination, I suppose, but in the almost lack of imagination. That is that it,
that's right.
Things are so graphically presented to you that's a very reasonable question, given that the power that such a thing has on our interior lives.
Yes, and that's what makes the work of Catholic criticism important, because people need guidance. They need resources. They need someone to point out the things that, you know, the good movies that they wouldn't have found otherwise, movies like Patterson, and also to warn them away from the bad movies that they might otherwise innocently have stumbled into. There is, you know, when you go to see the movies, it's up on this giant screen. The faces are really big and in your face. It's not like going to see a play where the action is, you know, it's all at a distance. The editing allows for a very intense experience, because you can go right from one sequence of events to another with no need for transition. It's almost a dreamlike series of images that movies can offer us. So it does combine the power of many different art forms in a uniquely powerful way.
Tim, great question. Thanks so much for that question. 888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. Your number three movie of the year, Silence, from Martin Scorsese. I was surprised to see it in that position. Maybe a comment on that, and I'll have to let you continue too on the other half, on the other side of the break, because we're coming. Well, you know what? I'll let you do the whole thing. I'll let the listener wait and marinate in the anticipation of why you put Silence, Martin Scorsese's movie about the persecution of Catholics in Japan, in your third spot in your top five, or as in your top 10, but we're just doing the top five on this show. Stephen Gradonis is our guest this hour. Our topic, movies, 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Widely regarded as the premier magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization, our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine features the articles you want by the authors you know and respect. Year after year, Catholic Answers magazine has been bringing the very best teachers the Catholic world has to offer into thousands of homes on a regular basis. Top-notch writers like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Mark Brumley, Tim Staples, Carlo Brissard, and Matt Nelson. The list goes on and on. It makes a perfect gift for family and friends, students, priests, and seminarians. Just about anybody you know. And of course, don't forget about a subscription for yourself. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com to subscribe today. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this post-Oscar Sunday, Monday edition of the program. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. And Deacon, I'm going to actually switch gears just for a quick second. I'm going to go to Irene in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and let her ask this question. Irene in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on Immaculate Radio, you are on with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. What's your question?
Hi, Cy. Thank you. And hello, Deacon.
Hello.
My question is about the movie Silence. I read a review, and I heard on your radio station another review, and they were different. The first one that I read was warning Catholics about the movie, and it seemed to be concerned that the impression is that God is silent to prayer. And then the second thing is that God would never not give a person the grace to resist sin. And the other, and Sister Hosea, didn't mention any of that. She just talked in general about the movie and seemed to think it was a fine movie. I haven't seen the movie, and I would like to hear your take on that first impression of the movie, the
sure.
negative one.
Right. Silence, first of all, for listeners who may not know the full story, is based on a much acclaimed 1960s novel by a Japanese Catholic author named Shizaku Endo, who was very much an admirer of and influenced by Graham Greene. He's been called the Japanese Graham Greene. And there are definitely analogies to be made between the story of Silence and the story of The Power and the Glory about priest who is put to a very hard test. But there are important differences, and Endo is particularly concerned with the phenomenon of what were called the hidden Christians, Christians who outwardly conformed with the government's requirement in the 17th century that you be a good Buddhist and that you reject Christianity by stepping on the fumi, which are these images of Our Lord or Our Lady specifically intended to be trampled, and as a way of denying and rejecting Christ. This was a test that was designed in the knowledge that in the early church, Christians were told by Roman persecutors, just throw a pinch of incense onto the fire in as a sacrifice to Caesar, in worship of Caesar, and then you can go home. And many of them refused to do so, and they were martyred and venerated as saints. And that's the standard that Catholics hold themselves to. It's important to remember, even back then, many Catholics also did throw that pinch of incense and did apostatize and go home. And after the persecutions ended, they wanted to receive absolution and be forgiven and be brought back into the church. And there was a whole debate about it. And eventually it was decided that they could be forgiven and be received back into the church. What makes the protagonist's suffering in this particular film so different from what the early Christians suffered is that they don't torture him. They don't torture the priest, played by Andrew Garfield, Father Rodriguez, to make him apostatize. He's ready for that. He's willing to lay down his life. He's willing to be martyred. But they torture his flock. They torture Japanese Catholics, people who have only come to the faith because of men like him. And even after they've stepped on Christ, they still torture them, and they'll torture them to death until he gives in. And he finds it unbearable that while he sits in comfort, they suffer for the sake of his testimony. That's not courage or heroism to him. And in the end, in what he perceives as an act of compassion and self-sacrifice, he gives up his heroic idea of being a martyr for his faith, and he steps on the image of Christ in order to end the sufferings of these other Christians. Now, I'm not going to tell you that what he did was the right thing to do. I am going to tell you that in his heart, his reason for doing it was compassion, and it required an act of great self-sacrifice for him. He even believes that he hears the voice of Jesus speaking to him from the Fumi saying, "It's okay. You can go ahead and trample. I came into this world to be trampled by men. I know your pain. You can, it's okay." And so he believes that he's doing it in obedience to the Spirit of Christ. What he ends up embracing for the rest of his life is this hidden Christian culture of Japan, where it's okay to be outwardly apostate and inwardly Christian. This is a defective form of Christianity from our understanding, but what's important to recognize is that the novel also points out that European Christianity also had defects that were illuminated by its encounter with Japan. So it's a critique of some of the defects and flaws of the European Christianity that Father Rodriguez represents, and a plea for empathy for Christians who dealt with this enormous suffering that they were confronted with in Japan without necessarily being an endorsement. That's my interpretation.
And that's probably why you made it your number three movie of the year. Irene, thanks so much for that question. A very controversial movie among Catholics.
Yes.
And so that's why
and
I
it should be.
Yeah.
It should be controversial. I don't want anyone to get the impression this is a movie that we should embrace and say this is a great Catholic film. It's a hard movie to embrace, but I think it asks hard questions that are very relevant to the times that we live in.
Your number two movie, Camera Person.
Yes. Camera Person is – this is the one of all the movies on my list. This is the one probably that people are least likely to have seen. You could call it a documentary, and it's by a filmmaker, Kirsten Johnson, who is a cinematographer for many acclaimed documentaries over the last several years. And what she's done in this film is to gather together bits and pieces of movies, bits and pieces of footage that weren't used in the movies that she worked on, and string them together into what you could call a scrapbook or a memoir. And at first, the footage seems kind of random. Some of it's more interesting, some of it's less interesting. But as the movie goes on, you begin to see certain themes emerge, partly in connection with the moral themes that are being explored in the films, like the persecution of people in Darfur, for example, other atrocities around the world. But then also you see that it begins to be about the relationship between the filmmaker herself and her subjects. We think of documentaries as being objective and merely recording what happens, and then that's not really true, because as soon as you are in a situation and you're filming it, it's a different situation. And what responsibility does that place on you as a filmmaker? I called camera person a kind of examination of conscience, and at times even a confession about the filmmaker's responsibility to her subjects. And I found it fascinating and powerful in that connection.
And when you have a kind of relatively obscure movie like that, where does someone, like, say, okay, I'll see it. Where do they go? I mean, how do you – maybe you just Google it.
Movies like this usually eventually show up on Netflix or Amazon.
Oh, okay.
That's – yeah. I don't know if it's – I don't think it's available yet, but it will be soon, I'm sure.
Janie. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio, you are on with Deacon Stephen Graydonis. We're talking movies. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call. So I was looking at decentfilms.com to find the review for Mean Girls, and I didn't see it. And so I was wondering if Deacon could give me his review on that. And in particular, I'm at a co-ed Catholic high school, and the psychology teacher wanted to show this movie because of the positive aspects and the negative aspects it shows in the movie about cliques. So I don't know if you have a suggestion for maybe another movie that can show that too.
That's a good question. I myself did – I'm surprised that you say you had trouble finding the review, because there is a review at decentfilms.com. If you go there and type Mean Girls into the search field, the review does come up. It's one of the very rare reviews at my website, which was not written by me. It was written by my lady, Suzanne, and she has only contributed a few reviews, but this is one of them. So she saw Mean Girls and she gave it a D+. She felt that it did have some things that were interesting and positive about it, but in the main, the messages that she took away from the film were, and I quote, "High school girls are basically backstabbing, lying gossipers at heart. Everyone who is not a total loser is having sex in high school. Being mean to other people won't ultimately make you happy. There's a good one. And of course, and this one's very key for my family, homeschoolers are ordinarily loser freaks unless they are really hot like Lindsay Lohan and become properly socialized." So definitely some problematic material in there with whatever good messages the film may have. And I don't deny that there are probably some. I wish I could come up with a better alternative for you. The movie – the one movie that comes into my head, and I'm not a big fan of high school movies generally, but that deals with social outcasts and how the popular crowd can exclude and be mean to them, is Napoleon Dynamite. I don't know if that movie would be suitable for your purposes, but I think it has some interesting things to say about that. Sorry that I'm not more help.
Thanks, Janie. Thanks for that call. You know, in hearing your answer, I realize that often there'll be a movie that's very appealing to young people, like maybe my kids liked it or whatnot, but it has certain assumptions in its worldview that I wish weren't there. And I wonder, like, do you talk to your kids about that? About the – well, yes, but underlying – because it's not always easy to root them out, and sometimes they'll say, well, that's not what they were saying. And maybe as an adult you can see it, and as a child they can't see it.
Yes, and that's why I always say it doesn't matter what the rating is. Parental guidance is always suggested. I think families need to watch movies together, and parents always need to talk to their children about the movies. And what becomes particularly powerful as you watch a number of movies is not the message of one film, but the message of 100 films. It's if something is really in the zeitgeist, if it's really as part of the spirit of the age, the assumptions of the culture, it's going to recur in movie after movie after movie. And someone who doesn't see so many films can resist seeing a negative influence or sometimes even a positive influence in a particular film. They say, oh, you're overthinking it. You're reading too much into it. But you watch enough of these movies and the pattern starts to become stronger and stronger. And those are the patterns we particularly need to point out to our children, because I don't think anyone is going to be greatly influenced by one movie, but I do think that people are enormously influenced by 100 stories that they take in whatever form.
Yeah, that makes good sense. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Graydonis. More when we come back on Catholic Answers Live.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
What are angels? What powers do demons have? Do demons ever possess places or things? In 20 Answers, Angels and Demons, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you understand these mysterious and powerful beings, as well as helping you avoid the snares and harms of those angels who disobeyed God and fell from His favor, the demons. 20 Answers, Angels and Demons is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Dr. Peter Krebs says, answering atheism gets high grades on the three R's. It's readable, reasonable, and researched. Its defense of the cosmological argument has depth and detail, yet it's not so technical that you need to take a philosophy course to comprehend it. Order your copy of Answering Atheism today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 10:17, when a man asked Jesus what he must do to inherit eternal life, Jesus looked at him with love and said, "Go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me." The man was crushed because he couldn't part with his many possessions. Then Jesus commented twice on how hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. The question remains, to what are you most attached? Never mind wealth and status. What about your work, your health and vitality, your family, your life as you are living it right now? What is it that would be the most difficult to give up? No matter how good it is only a spark of the flame of its source. And that good is the Lord Himself. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to be with you on a Monday afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and our guest this hour is Deacon Stephen Graydonis, an expert on film. And as someone you can read his reviews regularly at the National Catholic Register. And I want to talk about three films with you before we go back to calls. And I'll try to do it quickly, but three films from last year. First, your number one film of the last year, I don't think I heard of it. And I mean, I know movies pretty much, but it was Jim Jarmusch's Patterson. Can you tell us about that movie?
This is, I have to say, that for the second year in a row, my number one film is a quiet, winning love story that is named for an urban area in my own backyard. In 2015, it was Brooklyn, which is wonderful. Oh. And everyone listening, you want, trust me, you want to see Brooklyn.
I didn't know that was your number one movie. That is one of my favorite movies. I love that movie.
All right. There you go.
Okay.
Well, Patterson doesn't have the Catholic angle that Brooklyn does, but it is one. Adam Driver, not Andrew Garfield. They play together in Silence. But Adam Driver and Golshifteh Farahani might be my favorite screen couple of all time in this film.
Oh wow.
He plays a bus driver named Patterson. He's a very routine kind of guy. He wakes up every day and he goes and he drives his bus around the city. And in his spare time, he writes poetry in a notebook. And his wife, Laura is this very spontaneous spirit, bursting with creativity. Every day she has a different dream, and she's talented enough that she might pull some of it off. They're very, very different, but they each enjoy each other, and they respect the differences between each other. And in the whole movie, the action rises to something like tension only two or three times. We spend a week with these characters, and I don't think I've ever enjoyed a cinematic week more in my entire life. Patterson, just one of the most delightful films that I've seen. And it has that human quality of being a great film without having the kind of overwrought stress or crises that often make for great cinema. And I can praise the glories of a film like Silence or a Man for All Seasons or of Gods and Men, movies that are about human beings under great duress. But you remember we talked before about the trauma of cinema and then wanting something that's kind of healing. And for me, Patterson is that movie.
Well, I'm especially interested in it now, knowing that you thought so highly of Brooklyn. Brooklyn was a shocker to me because I think I saw it on a trip on a television. And it just, you know, it surprised me. I didn't even know what I was watching. And this movie unfolds that is just magnificent. So I will see Patterson. I got to find out where I can find it. Two other movies I wanted to ask you about, Deacon Stephen Greydonis. The first, Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson's return to directing, a movie with profound religious implications in that it's really a religious liberty, a religious freedom movie
in many ways.
It's about the meaning of that. Your take on Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge.
And Hacksaw Ridge also, we should say, had a good night last night at the Oscars. It was nominated for a number of awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. It walked away with sound mixing and film editing, which film editing in particular is an important award. Really kind of signals Hollywood's willingness to accept Mel back into the fold. The story based on the true story of Desmond Doss, the first Medal of Honor recipient to win the Medal of Honor as a conscientious objector, played by Andrew Garfield in his second role as a devout Christian suffering enormously psychologically and physically at the hands of Japanese antagonists.
Silence. Right.
And here he plays a pious Seventh-day Adventist who wants to serve his country in World War II, but he won't carry a gun. And the last third of the film is really about the Battle of Okinawa, where he performs these incredible feats of superhuman heroism, single-handedly saving – he's credited with saving 75 lives. His superior officers actually thought it was closer to 100. He thought it was closer to 50, so they compromised. But the middle of the film is about his battle for religious freedom. He wants a religious accommodation to serve his country in a manner in keeping with his conscience and his religious convictions. And this, of course, has a lot of things to say about the times that we live in. I wrote an article about Hacksaw Ridge and the battle for religious freedom in our day today. That's up at decentfilms.com.
All right. And the thing is, it's not just war and gore. It's a very charming movie at its heart.
Oh, yeah.
It's enormous charm to that movie. I thought – maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. I thought if Steven Spielberg makes that exact same movie, that probably wins Best Picture.
Well, maybe. You know, it's really a movie at its heart that only I think Mel Gibson could make because when I saw him when he came to the Sheen Center where we filmed Real Faith and introduced the film, he talked about the first half of the film as being sort of like like 1950s Americana,
yeah,
and then the second half being like medieval horror, and then what happens when you take the characters from the one story and then you put them in the other?
That's very Gibson, isn't it? It's like Apocalypto, where there's a kind of Edenic thing, and then what? You're in this whole other world. Okay, my other film I thought was just excellent this year. I don't know if you had it on your list, Hell or High Water.
Hell or High Water, yes. Almost made my top 10. It was
okay.
A very near thing. It's in my honorable mentions, or not my my runners up. So if you go to my 2016 article, it is in my runners up. Absolutely amazing script and a very powerful exploration of of guilt and responsibility in a very postmodern world. And the corporate facelessness of the true villains in the film, the banks, and then how our characters, you know, and particularly the protagonist played by Chris Pine, he thinks that because he has good motives, he can do these things and get away with the things that he does, and nobody's going to be hurt. But in the end, as Jeff Bridges tells him, you know, you are responsible for what you set in motion.
Yep.
Really, really good film. One of the year's best. Absolutely.
Oh, I like you even better now. 888-318-7884 is the number. Talking movies with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. We'll go to Leonardo in Woodbridge, Virginia, listening on the EWTN app. Leonardo, you are on with Deacon Stephen Gradonis.
Hi, thank you for being able to answer my question. So I'm calling in because I have a question that it relates to movies, but I feel that also it kind of speaks to other sort of relevant forms of media as well. And so I wanted to sort of call in and ask for sort of what your thoughts were. So on top of, you know, being a very avid movie lover, I'm also an avid gamer, as I'm sure a lot of your other current listeners are. And so I'm calling in because I've noticed both in movies and in forms of media like gaming, where a lot of these different forms of media have a lot of religious influences. So specifically Christian influences, we can go from, you know, movies like The Sisters Act and to the other side of the spectrum, like The Golden Compass and Da Vinci Code. You know, same with different types of video games. I mean, your viewers will probably hear familiar names like Final Fantasy or Skyrim or Dragon Quest. And so I noticed that on either side and movie and, you know, some of these Christian influenced and movies and other forms of media, especially the ones that are created by people from Eastern cultures, a lot of these forms of media have, you know, these religious influences that are placed in clearly sort of fictitious scenarios. They're not really using any, you know, explicit, you know, biblical figures in any really way. A lot of these movies or forms of media use the aesthetic of Christianity to tell a fictional tale. And so to my understanding,
Go ahead. Just get to the question, because I'm just watching the clock tick away there. So sentence then, the question, because I think you made you set the point very well. What's the question?
Yeah. So my question is, where do we sort of draw the line between what is – between calling these, you know, movies or forms of media sacrilegious versus licit religious inspiration? Like, where do we draw the line between what is sacrilegious?
It's a really good question, and you did put it really well. You've clearly thought about this for a long time, and you have some very sophisticated thoughts about it. It's true, certainly, and I'm not as familiar with the gaming world as you, and practically at all. But I do know that Japanese artists, and I've seen this in anime and in other cinema from the East, they are fascinated with Catholicism, and they often adopt aspects of the aesthetic of Catholicism, crosses and priests and cassocks and so forth, and divorce it from the theology of Christianity. I would say I have a limited tolerance for that sort of thing. I can imagine alternate worlds where history played out differently, or where Christianity had an influence that became where the faith was vestigial, and therefore you have certain things that look familiar even though the theology of Christianity isn't behind it. I'm more comfortable with these things when they're peripheral than when they're central. When they start to become a significant element in the story, I do become uncomfortable. And I would prefer to avoid it at that point, even if I wouldn't outright condemn it. I just find it healthier for my imagination to avoid the subversion of Christian images in that way. I hope that helps.
Thanks very much, Leonardo. I think we can squeeze one in if we go really quick. Shirley in Agora Hills, California, you are on with Stephen Gradonis. You're going to have to ask the question quickly, though.
Okay. Moonlight. When it won, I just said, oh, another film about a gay guy.
Okay.
All right, let him add. I messed up the clock. Go ahead, real quick, Stephen.
Very, very quickly, if you go to decentfilms.com, you can watch my 2-minute video review of Moonlight there. It's a film, obviously, that deals with some difficult material, but I think it also has some very important things to say about how we as a culture approach masculinity.
Stephen Gray Donis. You can find his homilies and his movie reviews at National Catholic Register, and you can find more, well, virtually everything about him at decentfilms.com. Deacon Stephen Gray Donis, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you, Si.
Well, I didn't do well with the clock, but we'll see you again tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.